Resting Places.
Tonight in Resting Places, we're taking you to one of the most photogenic Australian cemeteries, where the graves occupy some of Sydney's best real estate. They have iconic ocean views. Funny they could see the ocean. If you've ever walked along the Bondi to Coogee coastal walk in Sydney, you would have passed through Waverley Cemetery. It would be Sydney's most famous, mostly for that clifftop location. But as you'll find out soon, it's also quite different in terms of how it's run. It's also home to some very well-known Australian figures. Dr. Lisa Murray is a Sydney historian who wrote a field guide to Sydney cemeteries, and she joins me on Nightlife now. Hello, Lisa. Welcome.
Hi, Suzanne.
You're a bit of a cemetery nerd, aren't you?
I am a total cemetery nerd, and I wear that badge very proudly.
We've met a few people in this series who do wear that same badge, Lisa. Where did it start with for you?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it was probably in my early teens when I was on a church camp, and it was in an old sort of church and churchyard and things, and we hung out there for the weekend. It was on the Hawkesbury River, and we would like swing off the rope and jump in the Hawkesbury River and then get up and lie on some of the tombstones and warm up again and then do the whole thing again. So I think that's where it might have all started.
Right. Some R&R in the cemetery on this occasion. All right, let's go to Waverley. How did this cemetery end up being on, as I said, this prime Sydney real estate?
Well, the people of the eastern suburbs were agitating for a while for a cemetery, and the government was looking for other places, somewhere that would serve the entire sort of Sydney, the growing Sydney metropolitan area. But they realised it would be useful to have one out on in the eastern suburbs, and so they gave money to Waverley Council, actually. Mm-hmm. To establish the cemetery. And that was back in 1877.
Right. So back when probably the real estate wouldn't have been quite so valuable, I guess. How well settled was the area at the time?
Well, it was certainly growing in population, but it was still, I guess, there was plenty of land there, and they were able to, they started off with, as a lot of cemeteries do, start off with a small piece of land and then extend it over time. But by the 1890s, it had extended all the way down to the coast.
Right. So when you arrive there, how does the fact that you're in a cemetery by the sea change the atmosphere compared to other cemeteries?
What I think it does is that there's a couple of things. I think when you walk through the cemetery gates, you're greeted by this Gothic waiting room and cemetery lodge. Mm-hmm. They're sandstone. But then as you start walking through the cemetery, you're bedazzled by all of these white marble headstones. And I think there's something about the sloping site. Mm-hmm. You can... Often there's a breeze going through because it's coastal, so you can smell the sea air. And as you walk through the pathways, you get these wonderful vistas down through the cemetery of these, of all these beautiful marble upright monuments and headstones, and the sort of and the sea in the background, and then the sky. So imagine on a sunny day. It is just spectacular.
I'd imagine this might be too one of the cemeteries where you get the most visitors who aren't necessarily there to visit a graveyard, because people are coming up through that Bondi to Coogee walk, right? So
that's right.
You have to go through it.
Yeah, that's right, Suzanne. So I guess the main entrances were designed at the top of closer to where I guess the tramway was going and where the people were. But today, a lot of people encounter the cemetery along the cliff tops doing the walk, and it's very few who can resist leaving the walk for a few moments just to wander amongst the graves and read a few names and look at the statuary.
Dr. Lisa Murray is here. So in terms of the graves, how was the cemetery designed?
So most general cemeteries in New South Wales are designed with multiple denominational areas, but because this one was set up by Waverley Council, it actually only has three denominational areas. So it has what were the two major religions in the late 19th century, which were the Church of England, also known as the Anglicans today, and the Roman Catholics. Mm. So they were the two main areas, and then they had a third area, which they called the general area, and that just embraced everyone else, no matter what religion. So that's quite different to a lot of other cemeteries around Sydney and around New South Wales. I think the other thing about the landscape and the fact that it's by the sea is that they really wanted to play upon that picturesque setting. And so whereas other cemeteries have avenues of trees and things to define the landscape, Waverley Cemetery is very much about the sea. Mm. And so the landscape's quite stark in some ways, and so you're much more drawn to both looking at the individual monuments but also looking at these vistas and out to sea.
All right, so they let the landscape do the talking in a way. Yeah, it's interesting. So how many people are buried there?
Oh, that's a very good question. Quite a few. I think there's around 250,000 people buried there in about 48,000 graves. So multiple burials in graves. And that was very common. And a lot of the burial plots in Waverley Cemetery are very much about creating family plots. So people would buy up two or three plots and then enclose it as all one sort of space, and then that they could put quite a large monument in the centre that would do for a whole family. And so there are sort of almost dynasties sort of developing. And of course now, if you can prove that, you know, you are related to someone in the cemetery, you can still probably have your ashes put there.
Oh, really? But otherwise it would be shut to newcomers?
So Waverley is a very interesting case. They have been, they still do occasional burials. They're wanting to keep the cemetery, as we would call it, active, so still functioning as its primary purpose as a burial ground. And so they are open to urn ashes being placed on family plots, but they have been going back through the registers to find plots where they believe no one's been buried and try to work back through the burial rites. And if they can clear them, then they might offer them again. So if you've got a fair bit of cash, you may still be able to be buried at Waverley.
What do you mean? You actually really have to pay the big bucks to get in there, though?
Well, yes, it's, you know, it's prime real estate these days.
It's an exclusive kind of cemetery.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I've got Dr. Lisa Murray here. She's a Sydney historian and author of Sydney Cemeteries, A Field Guide. We're visiting Waverley Cemetery today in our Resting Places series. There's an Irish monument in the cemetery, Lisa. What's that commemorating?
Well, that's commemorating the big rebellion that happened in 1798. And a lot of the rebels, some of them were executed, but others were actually sent out as prisoners to Sydney. And so Michael Dwyer, who was the leader of the rebellion, he actually did come out as a convict and later and died in Sydney. He was originally buried in Devonshire Street Cemetery, which was where Central Station, the railway station, now stands. So when in 1898 the centenary of the rebellion was up, the Catholic and Irish community banded together and reburied Dwyer's remains and those of his wife out at Waverley Cemetery with the plan of doing a massive Irish monument. So the reburial happened to commemorate the centenary. There were apparently 10,000 people who attended the procession and the ceremony out at Waverley Cemetery. I mean, I think they must have been all through the cemetery, pretty much. It was a big affair. And then the monument itself is the largest of all in Waverley Cemetery. So you can, not quite, but pretty much see it from anywhere within the cemetery. It is a humongous Celtic cross marble. It's on a very large base and it has lots of Irish symbolism on it. It's got all the sort of Celtic intertwined designs, but then it's also got Irish wolfhounds, it's got lyres, there's the round towers in a mosaic floor, and the monument bears the names of all of the those who were involved in the rebellion. And later on, with the Easter Uprising in 1916, they actually added the names of those people. Okay. So it's very much constructed as a symbol of Irish independence and identity here in Sydney.
Now, as well as the monument, of course, there are quite a few notable people buried in Waverley Cemetery. The one I've always known about is Dorothea McKellar, who, of course, wrote My Country.
Yeah, that's right. She has a lovely little marble Calvary cross and a three-step base. It's a fine monument, but it's not humongous. There are lots of similar monuments like it through the cemetery, so you might not know necessarily that she's there, but she is quite close to the cliff top, so I reckon a lot of people who do the walk might stumble across her.
Yeah. Who else is in there that we might know of?
Well, you might have heard of someone called Dimmock.
William Dimmock.
So he was one of the founders of Dimmock's Book Arcade, which eventually evolved into Dimmock's the Bookshop we still know today. He died in 1900 and
he was only quite young. About 39.
Yeah, look, that's one of the really interesting things I think about walking through the cemeteries is that you can see these sort of death dates and it does make you pause. Some of them are quite young and, you know, and sometimes they die from diseases which today, you know, are perfectly curable. So I think it's always a sort of, there is that moment of memento mori, I think, walking through a cemetery and thinking about and realising that these people too made an impact. And yet there are, you know, in William Dimmock's case, he was only 39.
Yeah. So who else is there? William Dimmock, we had Dorothea McKellar. Mm-hmm. I think there's a writing theme going on here.
There is a bit of a writing theme. Let's go to sport. What about Victor Trumper?
The Test cricketer. Yeah.
Yes. So he died in 1915 and he has a lovely marble Celtic cross, which is delightful, but no recognition of the fact that he was like a cricketer. Like, unless you know the name Trumper, you're not going to know. And that's the case of a lot of people. They don't necessarily trumpet, shall we say, what they did in life, particularly in Waverley Cemetery. But there are some. One of my absolute favourites in Waverley Cemetery is probably someone you've never heard of. And it's his name is Charles Pert. And he was actually a circus high diver and he performed for the Fitzgerald Brothers Circus. He died in 1896 while he was performing his high diving act.
No.
So you can probably imagine maybe what happened. He missed or he hit the side of the tank he was aiming for and he died of his internal injuries shortly afterwards. But his headstone was actually put up by all of the circus people and so they did actually depict his occupation on the headstone. And so it's a fairly simple semicircular marble headstone, but it has the high diver Pert up the top, standing up on the edge with his hands sort of in front of him, ready to dive down, and a very faint line that goes around the edge of the headstone to a tank that's depicted down the very bottom of the headstone. Mm. It's quite unusual and it's very affecting.
Mm. All right. Well, going back to writers, Henry Lawson's there.
Henry Lawson, yeah. And a lot of people are quite shocked because, you know, very well-known writer and poet, but died in 1922, you know, poor and an alcoholic, has a very simple modern 20th century, what we call a desk and curb monument. So nothing flashy.
Mm-hmm. Fanny Durack.
Fanny Durack, yes. So she was one of our first swimmers and she represented Australia, fought very hard to represent Australia at the Olympics. And she's buried there and she has, again, a 20th century slab and desk monument that has been restored and is quite a popular spot.
We might mention too, Lawrence Hargrave was a well-known aviator.
Yeah, again, I mean, it's just, it's like a roll call of famous people who've really contributed to Australian society. So he died in 1915 and he has quite a simple semicircular marble headstone. And interestingly, some historic photos in the early 20th century show that he didn't have a headstone at all. So I think there's a case where, in fact, people recognise someone and put up a headstone later. And that's actually quite common. You know, headstones are quite expensive to put up. And so often the families couldn't afford necessarily immediately to put up a headstone and it was beholden on later generations. And sometimes that's taken up by fans and friends and historians.
Now, there were, you already mentioned that some of the, I think the Irish rebels had been relocated from the Devonshire Street Cemetery, which existed where Central Station is today. A lot of others ended up being transferred too, because that whole cemetery was dug up, wasn't it?
That's right. That's right. So Waverley wasn't the only place they went, but obviously it was quite a popular place to relocate remains. And probably one of the most famous people to be relocated there was Sir James Dowling, who was the Chief Justice of New South Wales, and he has this amazing sandstone obelisk with crossed downturned torches, and this was the original headstone from Devonshire Street. So it's much, much earlier, and that's one of the easiest ways actually in Waverley to be able to identify some of the headstones that may have come from Devonshire Street, because they tend to be sandstone. Whereas by the 1870s, when Waverley Cemetery was opening up, marble was becoming the sort of more popular choice. And because of the location and the way that the marble really stood out in the landscape, it was really the material of choice. So that's a very easy way to kind of at least have a first guess at where some of these other headstones came from. Yeah.
So if you want to go, Lisa, and walk around the cemetery and see some of the you know, the Dorothea McKellar or Henry Lawson or Victor Trumper's graves, sounds like they don't necessarily do a song and dance to let you know they're there. Is there a guide or do you have to kind of just hope for the best?
Well, it depends. You can leave it to serendipity or you can also join a tour. For instance, Waverley Cemetery has a friends group and they do tours, I think, pretty much every weekend. So you can join up on a tour and be taken to some of the graves. And also there's an app where you can sort of search up names and it can show you where they are. And also if you pop in to the cemetery office, if it's open and there's staff there, they can often give you some directions as well.
There's someone you really want to go see, you can pop in and check where, you know, where so-and-so. Thank you so much for taking us on this walk around Waverley Cemetery tonight, Lisa.
It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Lisa Murray is a Sydney historian. She's the author of Sydney Cemeteries, A Field Guide.
Fresh ideas and captivating conversations.
Nightlife with Suzanne Hill on ABC Local Radio.